Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Credit Access Grameen Limited Q1 FY22 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Renish Bhuva from ICICI Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Bhuva.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Nirav. Hello and good evening to everyone, and welcome to the Credit Access Grameen Q1 FY22 earnings conference call. From the management team, we have with us today Mr. Uday Kumar, MD and CEO, Mr. Balakrishna Kamath, CFO, Mr. Nilesh Dalvi, VP Investor Relations. We will start with the opening remarks and then open the floor for Q&A. I would like to thank the management team for giving us the opportunity to host the Q1 FY22 earnings call. I will now hand over the call to Mr. Uday, sir, for opening remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Renish. Thank you. Good evening to everyone. I thank you for taking your time and joining us today to discuss our first quarter FY22 financial performance. The quarter was quite challenging as we witnessed the resurgence of COVID with much higher intensity compared with first wave, causing large-scale impact on human lives across the country. COVID 2.0 was quite devastating as we saw our near and dear ones succumbing to the wrath of pandemic. We are deeply grieved by loss of our 8 employees due to COVID 2.0. We have extended all the possible support to families of the departed employees, which includes compensation close to 4 times of their annual CTC, 1 year monthly salary to the family, or a job offering to the eligible family members. The timely response from the government administrations in form of imposition of lockdowns, restrictions, ramping up of the medical facilities, arranging vaccination drives on war footing, and increased awareness among people basis learning from COVID 1.0 resulted in COVID 2 waning at a rapid pace. We continue to encourage our employees and customers to get vaccinated at the earliest as the vaccination was being conducted in age-wise phased manner. As of July 21, around 60% of our field staff and 86% of our head office staff have got their first dose. As part of our CSR activities, we continue to provide support to local administrations by supplying them with health and medical kits and grocery kits to our customers who contracted COVID. Further, we continue to facilitate vaccination to our customers at every branch working with local authorities. Given the shorter duration of COVID-2, many businesses have been able to gradually resume their operations. However, the recovery has been relatively slower across states, which witnessed stringent lockdowns during May and June, which got gradually relaxed in July. At CA Grameen, we saw collections excluding arrears to decline from 94% in March to 93% in April and 79% in May, primarily on account of inability of field force to meet customers and certain customers holding back repayments to conserve cash in case of any unforeseen COVID emergency. Prioritizing on employee and customer safety and adhering to the government notifications, we announced deferment of collections in second week of May, largely up to 1 month, primarily in Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, Kerala, and Maharashtra, where stringency was quite high, while continuing with our collection efforts in other states. Important to note that there was no DPD standstill observed during the collection deferment period. Decline in collections led to increase in overdue portfolio during first quarter. However, with COVID 2.0 subsiding at a faster pace and increasing relaxation across various states in June and July, the collections gradually picked up to reaching 81% excluding arrears in June and further gained momentum reaching 91% in July. Collections including arrears touched 97% in July, indicating robust recovery on the back of improved borrower confidence. We strengthened our collection team by redeploying 200 plus members from various business support teams to enable faster recovery. This will help us to sustain the collection momentum and work toward faster recovery over coming months. While it is early to accurately estimate the impact of COVID-2 on credit cost, the initial signs are very encouraging. The impact of COVID-2 has been less prolonged compared to COVID-1, and hence we expect the asset quality to recover at faster pace. Comparing COVID-1 and COVID-2, as highlighted on our slide 6 of our investor presentation, peak incremental PAR 30 during 2 was around 8.8% calculated on March 21 portfolio compared to 9.8 in wave 1. Similarly, peak incremental PAR during wave 2 is around 4.3 calculated on March 21 portfolio compared to 6.7 in wave 1. Similarly, peak incremental non-paying customers during wave 2 were around 4.2% compared to 6.5% in wave 1. So collection efficiency, excluding areas, touched 91% within 2 months post end of collection deferment compared to 4 months during wave one. Similarly, collection efficiency, including areas, touched 97% after 2 months compared to 7 months during wave one. While we are quite positive on the speed of recovery, we would be in a position to provide a better clarity on credit cost by September after witnessing 2 more months of repayment behavior. In accordance to our early risk recognition and conservative provisioning policy, we have created adequate provisioning coverage based on repayment pattern observed during the month of June and July. Since we recognize stage 2 after 15 days of stage 3 after 60 days, compared to industry, we have created INR 143.5 crores of additional provision against loan in 60 to 30 buckets and 61 to 90 buckets. Talking briefly about MMFL, the collection excluding areas declined from 90% in March 21 to 88% in April, 68% in May, and 60% in June. It's recovering sharply to 83% in July. External lockdowns across core markets led to drop in collections during May and June. Collection deferment was allowed during May and June due to inability to meet customers, primarily in Tamil Nadu, Maharashtra, Kerala, and Karnataka. Collections received groups despite collections. Collection deferment helped in reduction of overdue, resulting in controlling PAR during quarter. On the back of robust improvement in collection in July, we have again got our focus back in on business growth. In addition to opening 35 new branches in March, we opened another 66 branches primarily across newer states as part of our diversification strategy in July. In the month of July, our disbursement reached 1,107 crores at CA Grameen and 151 crores in Madura, together surpassing our disbursement during Q1 FY22. This progress is quite a good validation that we are back in the path of expansion and growth. While we shall drive expansion of branch network in CA Grameen, at MMFL, we shall focus on increasing the business from existing branches through new customer acquisition and monetizing of existing 10.5 lakh customers base by generating higher business from them in line with our ethos of single channel concept of supporting the growing aspiration and our life cycle needs. Together, we are on our course to achieve initial achievement of our merger synergies in this financial year. We back our rural growth story in spite of current challenging times and shall continue to strengthen our competitive position in the market share. We remain cautious of the possible third wave. However, with increasing vaccination throughout the country, we believe that the impact of virus on both business and personal lives will reduce going forward, paving the way for back to normal course of business. Historically, we have showcased our ability to imbibe learning from adverse events and have risen to the occasion during testing times. The observe, learn and adopt approach adopted by us have proved to be a catalyst in providing the much needed capital creation across the hinterland. We shall continue to capture the growth opportunity being the largest trusted microfinance institution in the country. Talking briefly about our consolidated performance highlights during Q1 FY22, GLP grew by 8% YOY to INR 12,664 crore. Active borrower declined by 5.6% YOY to 37.85 lakhs, mainly due to the write-offs during the period. Total income was flat on YOY basis at INR 617 crore, primarily due to derecognition over 21.3 crore interest income on stage 3 portfolio and reduced lending rate owing to reduced cost of borrowing. NIA declined 8.3 YOY to INR 352.7 crore. We had to incur negative carry cost on account of maintaining higher liquidity given the volatile situation due to COVID-2, which is almost 2 crore per month. Pre-provision operating cost was 216 crore. Impairment on finance instrument was 188 crore, which included the impact of write-off of 79 crore. Our total ECL provision on consolidated basis stood at 732 crore, amounting to 6.3% of gross loan portfolio against GNP of 7.56%, of which 90+ DPD is only 4.02%. We continue to maintain higher liquidity at 2,222 crore, which was around 16% of total assets as on June 21. With improving visibility on business front and normalized operations, we shall gradually look to bring down the liquidity to 10% by September in a phased manner. This will lower the negative carry impact and increase NIMs going forward. With an improving business environment and opening of new branches, our strong liquidity, capital adequacy, and balance sheet will help us to drive growth over coming months, surpassing our last year's performance. The company has received a demand notice along with the assessment order dated June 25, 2021 for a payment of totally approximately 2,333 crore income tax, including surcharge and cess, for the assessment year 18-19 from a national faceless assessment center of the income tax department. The company's assessment based on legal advice is that demand notice is based on incorrect interpretation of law by assessment officer. The company has reviewed the said assessment in detail along with tax legal experts and is fully confident of defending its legal position before the appropriate tax authorities and to ensure that inaccurate basis of arriving the income tax demand is rectified based on facts, merits and advice. Further, based on advice from legal and tax experts, the company has filed writ petition before Honorable High Court of Karnataka, Bangalore, seeking to quash the IT demand notice and assessment order dated June 25, 2021, issued for assessment of 18-19 by National Faceless Assessment Center. The Honorable High Court of Karnataka has further granted an interim stay on the assessment order, demand notice, and computation of tax sheet dated 25 June. As issued assessment order assessment year 2018-19 by the National Faceless Assessment Center of the Income Tax Department. In the light of the said order, the Income Tax Demand Department is restrained from collecting or taking any further steps for the recovery of the demand arising from the aforesaid demand notice. So the legal and tax guidance has been given to us that there is no need of any contingent liability in this matter. So with this overview, I would now like to open the forum for question and answer session. Thank you very much for patiently listening to me.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Shreepal Doshi from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. So my question was on this collection efficiency number for May, wherein we had given holiday to the customers. So therein, the collection efficiency number is only for the non-holiday given customers, or is it, how should we read that number?
This is for non-holiday given number.
Okay. Thank you. So the next question was with respect to the branches that we've added during the quarter. So our overall branch number has not increased. So have we closed down some of the branches during the quarter?
No, this is the branch opening what we did in July, Sipal. So that is why June number there is no change.
Okay, got it. And so in the ECL, so for our stage 3, overall ECL is close to 58-59% for the console also, and for the standalone also broadly similar. So I understand that, you know, for stage three, it used to be around 70-75%. So do you expect that we will have to do incremental provisioning to reach to that level, or we expect there will be rollbacks and it will not be material?
We expect a rollback. That is why we provided little less, because there's a large number of customers are paying customers. We are paying more than 50% of the monthly dues. So where we have taken little lesser LGD. That is why the average has come down to 57%.
Okay. And just one last question with respect to this rollback. So based on your experience and, you know, based on our customer track record also, what percentage of the customers tend to roll back to, say, you know, on the date of payment, they're able to repay? So basically becoming standard from PAR 30 bucket. So have you done any analysis or any some work on that side wherein we come to know on this side?
So, you know, this is very different from a stable period to a pandemic period, Sripal. So in the pandemic period, the people going into 30, 60 bucket was quite fast, and similarly coming out also quite fast. But stable period, normally, you know, once they cross 60 to 90, there's a little lesser. In the case of current situation, I can't say it is a continuous process. At least July month, we observed close to 52-54% moved from 60 buckets to 30 buckets kind of thing, from 60 bucket to below bucket.
Acha, okay. And so,
I can't say it's a standard stable process, because the speed of coming back also fast. That's what only I can validate here.
Right. Just one aspect, that does the weekly collection efficient weekly collection model help us here, because the EMIs are relatively smaller as compared to, you know, the monthly model. So it helps probably weekly collection model more to roll back versus a monthly collection model. So because we have Madura, which is on the monthly side, and we are on the weekly side.
I mean, I don't want to tell about others. For everybody, you know, their baby is very good. So for us, weekly worked always well, and we continue to work on weekly, which is validated multiple times for us.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much, and good luck for the next quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Apoorva Trivedi from Moon Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. A few questions from me. One, on the tax issue, if you can just clarify, you know, what kind of timing do you expect for resolution? Have you, you know, received any advice from your lawyers on, you know, the process from here on and how long it will take?
Yeah, Apoorva, see, with the stay from the government, actually there is no order to us now. It is back in the tax officials' court. They have to come back and submit to the court, actually. So unless they come back and then
Notification for their decision.
Yeah, they have to come back, and until then, we are not supposed to act on it, actually. So as of now, there is no order for us.
Okay. I guess it will depend on what the tax department comes back with, and if they insist on this, then there's going to be some processes.
From the legal and accounting expert point of view, there is no case. That's why they say that there's no need of any provision requirement also, or a contingency requirement also at this point of time.
Okay. But just to be clear, so the High Court has asked the tax department for explanation of the demand notice, right? They have not said that the demand notice is not valid.
No. What they said is demand notice is stayed. If any objection, they have to come back.
Okay. All right.
So,
second question, you know, you mentioned. Yeah.
With stay on the demand, and unless income tax will come back with clarification or a modified demand or anything, so till then, I mean, anything will start only after that. Till then, it's null for us.
Sure. Second question, on the disbursements, you mentioned that, you know, they've normalized almost in July. I just wanted to understand what criteria you're using in terms of handing out disbursement. especially to existing customers, you know, where there may be, for example, overdues and things like that?
See, the currently the majority of disbursements happening for the customers who closed loan between April to now, or some of them are March also. So, and maybe as the currently the normal disbursement, we don't see any abnormal disbursement for any customers. And there may be, we have earlier, we are very rigid about even 1 week overdue we would not have disbursed, but now we are realizing that we need to be respecting the situation. So even there is 1 or 2 weeks of overdue, if they pay back that, we will disburse to them also. So there is no further any big change in our disbursement pattern. And we already started the new customer acquisition also. I think August, September, we will see increased customer acquisition as well. Plus, anyway, we opened many branches. So the new customer acquisition starts going forward.
Okay, so just to clarify, when you say, you know, 1 to 2 weeks overdues are also, are you there?
Yeah, they have to pay that. It's
two
not that
1 to 2 weeks.
They have to pay the overdue, then still will
be. Before they get.
Correct, exactly.
Okay. And last question, just in terms of additional provisions, you know, you mentioned, I think you have some 143 crores of, you know, excess provisions. How do you think about utilizing those provisions? You know, the way I'm thinking is, in the first wave, you had a total of 810 basis points of total provisions. In the second wave, so far, you know, it's less than 2%. Is it fair to assume that you're going to see elevated provisions for the next 2 to 3 quarters? You know, you would be utilizing the excess provisions?
See, what I said, the excess provision is compared to the industry standard because we provide at a 60 days basis. That is why, compared to industry, we have at least 143 crores of additional provision. However, this is part of our ECL because our ECL itself is a early provisioning process, which automatically carries the management overlay, an additional overlay. That is the 143 crores. And having said that, your question is about what will be the potential provision going forward. So our strong view is that we did not have any additional provision requirement in September. We have covered significant requirement. So our sense, Q2 should be business as usual.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Amit Nanavati from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. My question again on credit cost. So basically, if I just look at PAR 0, where we peaked last time around wave 1 versus today, clearly, you know, 18% peak in September versus a 30-31% peak in June, right? And provision cover in wave 1 where we were sitting at north of 70%. That's run down to 55-56%. So how should one look at, and again, it's a repeat question, but how should one look at the credit cost, at least in the context of wave 1 customer who turned NPA where we had provided 70-75%? That should now, because you had a wave 2 immediately after the customer turning NPA, should be a 100% write-off case, and then you have a wave 2 impact on top of that, right? So are we still comfortable with the credit cost outcomes to be lower than FY21?
Yeah, I think, what our anticipation is clearly the cost of credit for wave 2 should be much less than the wave 1. Even earlier we estimated, even the last year also, last quarter we talked about it. Our view is that based on the experience of our employees, based on the experience of the customers, based on that the high-risk customer already delinquent as of March 31st, so the additional incremental cost for wave 2 should be much lesser than wave 1. But I think, you know, these are too early time to give a guidance number. Maybe by end of Q2, we should be able to give a real indicative, but as per in a gross estimation, our credit cost for wave 2 should not be more than 60% of the wave 1.
Understood. Secondly, in one of the charts that you provided on slide seven, so on stage two, there was a 6% of customer base which was not paying you. That number, on an overall basis, non-paying customer was around 13%. That has come down to 6.5% in July. Fair to expect that large part of that is just the improvement in stage two, right?
Yeah. Large part of them are stage two, correct.
So, at a similar level, one is not seeing that kind of improvement in part-paying customers. These were 19%, improved to just around 17%. So, would these non-paying 6% customers now be part-paying customers? Is that a fair assumption to make? Which is basically bloating up the part-payment customers.
Sorry, I couldn't completely get your question. Nilesh, one minute. Nilesh, please.
No, he's, you can take the partial movement is only from 19 to 16 to 17. So the non-payment has moved to partial.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe Nilesh is trying to clarify me. He says that basically what is happening is non-paying customer moved to partial. If you see non-paying at 12.9%, come down to 6.5%. So basically, 6.4% of non-paying become paying as of July.
Understood. Understood.
So basically, as of July, 6.5% majority of them in the stage three, because 3.5% of March 31st, which was 60-day bucket, have moved to, I mean, in the 90-day bucket in the June quarter.
Understood. Understood.
So the incremental is quite low. That's what we are showing in the slide six section.
Understood. Last thing, I just didn't catch your comment on your 60-day plus DPD customer, what rollbacks you've seen in July.
Yeah, I said about 50-52%. Yeah, 50-52% is rollback in July. So, but let us see how much in that 69 is 36%. Sorry, 69 is 36%. 30 to 60 is about 54%. The rollback in July month, yeah, I think it is a quite speed. We have to see August, September.
Understood.
Because you know, as the low hanging fruits will be done in the July, right? August, September will slowly be moving to the hard buckets.
Correct.
That's why I said that's why it cannot be stable, but in a quarter we should be doing better overall.
Sure. Thank you, sir. That's it, Kanan.
Thank you. Thank you, Amit.
The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. So on the credit cost, if I look at stage three number, on that we are making a provision of 60%. There is a reasonable likelihood that we will have to make almost 100% provision on this book over a period of time. Probably this 8% number may reduce to 6%, which is the indication that we have got in July. But going forward, the improvement may be much lower. So there will be still probably an elevated credit cost for one more quarter before we see a normalized credit cost coming in.
No, I agree. There will be credit cost, additional cost to P&L when we write off. But today already, if the no payment zone, already we are making 75% Nidesh. Wherever paying customer, we even paying more than 50%, we are providing 50% totally. So even when we are writing off, whenever, you know, I agree that about 20% or 25% we have to take the cost to P&L at that time. So it may be 2-3 or 2-4, but overall, we also assume that almost 25% will come back. So it will eventually net off the cost. The flowback will take care of that additional requirement.
Sure. And in Madura also, in Madura also, I think there could be a possibility that the credit cost may remain elevated in the coming quarters because the collection trends are inferior to grade access.
Yes. Correct. So Madhura, normally, you know, there will be one quarter lag between us and them. So probably we will have to do little higher in the Q2, because if you see all the last four quarter, we have seen that there is little lag in the going into stage three because of monthly collection and about that 90 days DPD bucket we use. So maybe there will be slight increase potential in the Q2. But still, we believe it won't be significant.
Sure. And so lastly, by when we will be moving to weekly model in Madhura? The complete integration with Madhura, entire process on the ground, then will happen.
Yeah, I will tell you. What happened, already about 250 branches we moved into our own system, you know, T24 system. And the new customer acquisition, Madhura is already on a weekly new model, any new customer. Okay. During this quarter, another 250 branches already, you know, almost between July, August, we are moving the balance, all branches. So that means from September 1, all the branches in Madhura will do any new customer in the new model only, not the old model. So even renewal will start from October 1. So October will start the renewal model also new, so that only the loan disbursed for the existing customer will remain, will run down in 12-16 months time. But new customer always in the new model with the new offering, not just the like our bouquet of products, you know, life cycle need products, credit line, all these established for the new customers already. And then the fresh new customers, all new branches, all branches will do the new model already. So we provided again our CBS extended to Madhura already.
Sure. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Thank you, Yogesh.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratik Chheda from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. My question is more on cost of funds. We've seen a sharp increase in cost of, for marginal cost of borrowing on a sequential basis. So is it completely coming from your higher liquidity on the balance sheet, or has there been some increase in lending rates from the, from our lender as well?
Actually, no, we borrowed very little in the quarter. The marginal cost increased because we borrowed only two long-term fund from international and domestic. That's why the cost looks high. On a normal course, our cost is not high. Our overall cost is, on the last 13-12 months, it's little high because a lot of funds, what we, legacy cost is still there. Because whatever we borrowed of short-term fund in the last 9-12 months. So there is a rundown of the, what you call, low-cost funds. So, but overall cost, you know, is still at 9.2 only. Overall cost of borrowing. It is telling to remember there's slight increase and the marginal cost for the quarter is increased. Overall cost of borrowing is still low and our pricing to customers not changed.
Okay. So the pricing, do you plan to change your pricing then on the upcoming next 6 months? And do you feel that the cost of borrowing is pretty much bottom out at this level?
We don't see cost of borrowing going up. Probably it will remain stable for some time. We are not anticipating increase in the cost of borrowing. However, we have to see how the new regulation comes. Maybe there is an opportunity to increase some pricing.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akshay Ashok from Dalal & Broacha Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. What is the percentage of top-up loans in this disbursements done in July? And if you can give any idea of any reason.
Sorry? What is the percentage of which loan you said? Sorry.
The disbursements that you have done in July, which exceeded the entire quarter of June, what you said, right? What percentage is top-up loan?
There is no top-up loan.
Okay, and I hear you. So only people who have paid have got this loan, or it's not new customers, right?
It's a renewal of the loan. Customer would have paid back in March, April, May, June. We would not have dispersed because of all these strict lockdowns and when disbursement in operation or restrictions in operation. So the renewals have been carried on.
renewals?
There may be insignificant, what you call, other loans like additional loans, which normally no, because many loans are yet to be disbursed to customers. There are waiting borrowers.
What is the percentage restructured in this quarter?
We are not. Restructured one you are asking?
The restructuring, yes.
So we did not do restructuring this quarter. Our overall restructured portfolio is only 0.7%, which was majority done in the quarter of March. And I think hardly we did about 6 or 9 crores in this quarter.
Okay,
so we
have
not
so
done
one of the
major rest. We don't have a restructured portfolio much.
You don't have. So you have to maybe take write-offs if it slips.
We can't. Our strong view is to exhaust all the opportunities before going to restructure. And restructuring is only where there is at least there is some cash flow with the customers. So without that, we won't restructure. It will be only a postponement otherwise. So that is why even the last time also we did very little. And this time also you may do very little where there is some cash flow is available, but they need some support. We will do, but maybe in August, September we will do, but it will be very little. We are not anticipating too much of restructure.
What is the percentage growth you guys are anticipating for FY22 and GLP growth?
I'll tell you, sir. I'll give a comparative. Last year we got 5.5 months of growth period. We are able to grow close to 13%. Okay. This year we would get, including July, if you say, we will get almost nine months of period. I mean, just I am praying again that there will not be wave 3. Okay. So given that we get 9 months time, definitely we'll surpass what we did last year.
Okay. Last one, for these microfinance companies, always you guys are comfortable if the collection efficiency is hit high 99% levels, right? So you think with normalized, you feel we will reach those kind of levels, because microfinance, for it to be very successful, you need to hit high collection efficiency numbers of 98-99%. You feel at least by the end of FY22, if there's no third wave, you hit those collection efficiency numbers again?
I think, you know, 98% is potential, 98-99. With the behavioral change.
That, no, sir, before COVID, credit access used to all the stuff and GNPA is below 1%.
Wait, I'm coming there. So
yeah.
The behavioral change has changed the overall credit card to some extent. Our sense is, you know, 1% cost probably will move to 1.25-1.3% going forward on a stable cost. Stable period, and it won't change too much, but yeah, at least 20-30 bps will increase from our earlier period. So that means about 1.25-1.3% should be a potential stable credit cost. So that is what our estimation.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you. All the best.
Just to give a clarity, even let's say in March, we have done about almost 94-95% collection we reached. So with about 3.5% 60 days plus portfolio. So that means we reached 98% almost, correct? 3.5% is your NPA and 95% collection. So that means that the shortfall is only 1.5%, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All the for the next quarter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shreya from CLSA. Please go ahead. Shreya, may I request you to unmute your line from your side and go ahead with your question?
Sorry, thank you so much. So I have two questions. One is from the side of the state-wise PAR 0 book. So can you, the experience has been that in wave one, we saw Maharashtra struggle and we saw the recovery in the state delayed with the collection efficiency struggling in that state for quite some time. While we understand that you are anticipating lesser impact of wave two and you're seeing lesser impact of wave two, can you talk about Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, because the PAR 0 book is, I mean, Karnataka is the highest and Maharashtra and Tamil Nadu are somewhere at PAR. So if you can talk about these two states specifically, and what kind of recovery or challenges that you're facing over there? And so second question I have is from, there are these, your annual report talks about these loans that you have come up with. There is this COVID exigency loan, and there's a three-year tenor loan to help businesses, help restart businesses. So if you can give a little bit of detail about these loans, how many customers have been given these loans, what kind of share of the gross loan is it, how big is it, how small is it, if you can give some details on this.
Sure. So if you see a slide, slide four, so Karnataka already come back to 92% collection in July, if you see. So that's why it is, we don't see any worry in Karnataka actually. So nor do we have any worry in Tamil Nadu, which also back to 90% already. We may still have a little worry in Maharashtra only, despite it's done very well. But still, we may have a residual impact in Maharashtra more because of the continuous lockdown in many places for a longer period. Also followed by, again, flood impact in majority of the southern Maharashtra districts. So we still have some challenge in Maharashtra, but we don't see any challenge in Karnataka and Tamil Nadu. From our collection perspective, the progress what we are seeing is quite positive in these two states. So Maharashtra is little challenge, MP has little challenge, but other states we are doing very well.
So but the table on figure 4 is for, it excludes the EMI holiday customers, right? So in spite of that, you don't see any challenges for Karnataka, Tamil Nadu for that matter?
No, we have not seen any challenge in Karnataka and Tamil Nadu.
The entire state does not have any pockets of lockdowns the way Maharashtra has been facing those district-wise lockdowns still happening?
It was very, very few states. We finished, for example, Mysore had some little extra lockdowns. And currently also because the bordering districts have some lockdowns. Border districts of Kerala has some restrictions. But we have not seen any major impact in those. There are some delay, but we don't see any challenge there. Maharashtra, we have some challenges because of the multiple impact in that particular geography, particularly southern Maharashtra. If you see last 2 years, there are multiple impacts continuously. The flood and the COVID, the long-term lockdown, again flood, again COVID and again flood. So 5 events happened in last 24 months, which was little over for that geography. So we respect that, and there will be some impact. If at all, our higher delinquency, it will be Maharashtra, not Karnataka.
Okay, sure.
And on your annual report data, is basically the two things. One is about restart is nothing but the restructure portfolio. I think we did about 11,000 odd customers, about 75 crores, which was done in Q4. So that was highlighted in the annual report. And we also support... the 3 year loan what we started is the retail finance loan. Even in the microfinance, if the loan is more than 80,000, if any customer takes, we made it 3 year loan, not the 2 year, because we don't want the high EMI for the customer. That we are not dispersed many, but maybe I have 6%. Sorry, we have 6% of the loans in 3 year loan now.
6% of gross loan portfolio.
Yeah, 3 years portfolio.
And so that COVID exigency loan that is there?
No, that was done initially in the first lockdown time. OTP based disbursement, that is basically 2,000 rupees loan if customer wants emergency money to credit to their bank account, because it was locked down, no movement of there, but if only bank was operating. I'm talking about March, April of 2020.
Of 2020. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
sure.
At that time, what we did to inform the customer, if they have any very emergency, they can call us. We can disperse to their bank account 2,000 rupees on a OTP-based authentication. But it was not very, I think 200-300 people have taken that advantage at that time. But that all repaid and closed.
Okay, sure. Thank you. That's it for me. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Abhijit from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, sir. Just to go back to the DPD movement, especially the 0 to 31, So what we see is that the 0 to 30 years moved down sharply in July, whereas the older buckets are close to kind of flattish. So want to understand, like in the context of what you said, like there's been some disbursement support to the borrowers given as well. So want to understand, like the 1,000 or 1,100 crore kind of disbursements that you've done in July, if you can quantify what share of that would have been to, let's say, pool of customers which were in 0 to 30 pool as of end of June.
So I think, you know, it is 0 to 30 could be some, but I don't have right now classification of that. But majority is it's actually paying bucket loan. As I said earlier, it's a renewal of loans where customer have paid the loans already between March, April, May, June. There is no, I don't think there is a relation between the older bucket moving and the disbursement. So older bucket will move because whichever in 60-day bucket, even 30-day bucket of March 30, there's a high tendency of moving in the Q1 because there's a lesser ability for us to go and follow up and recover at that point of time.
Got it.
That is why the higher bucket remains at that level.
And just from a thought process point of view, like want to understand why we have refrained from doing any restructuring as such. Like as in if you're able to cut down the EMIs for the borrowers by let's say half, shouldn't that itself kind of drive better behavior on the ground? Or if you can kind of share
we need to realize that a group of customers have their own cohesive approach. Okay, we should recognize that if there's 15 people are there, 5 people like we go and restructure and do everything, there is an impact on the entire behavior of the entire group. We should be careful in doing that. That is why we take this as a last approach. We want to go with the current because everybody has their own tendency to approach. They have a cohesive nature. They support each other with a specific value and their ability, right? So we on our own should not go and dilute that initially. So we will take all the steps possible to recover in the normal course and change the pattern. As a last resort, we may go back and take the group approval to do it, not now. So that's why I said we may do it, but as a last resort. And where there is a ability of customer there to pay at least some money, because we can't go and just change the do the restructure. There's no necessity actually. Even the last year also, we did not do the same. We did not do that. We actually took the approach of taking the last resort and did only some 11,000 odd customers. And it gave us good result. And we believe this will give us good result this time also.
Very helpful, sir.
And it is not an individual loan, please keep in mind. It's a group of customers came together and we are working with a group. We should be extremely careful doing tinkering the loan of individual within that group.
Got it, sir. And so when I look at the PAR trends for Madura, we don't see similar kind of movement as we see for trade access. This is on slide 8. So has there been a DPD freeze during the interim months, like until June?
Yeah, in Madura we had some DPD freeze was done in the month of June, actually. So that is why there is a movement is slightly different. That is why we expect the movement will happen this quarter. That's why we said there will be some lag in the movement into DPD bucket. So we can expect a little higher credit cost coming in Q2 for Madura.
Got it. So last one,
overall perspective, it will be insignificant because we don't expect anything other than business as usual in Grameen. That's why overall we don't see any impact.
Sure. And so there was one news article which said that Sadhan, which is the industry body, has recommended that SFG loans should be also included when calculating the household income under the new set of guidelines. So want to understand, like, how does it impact our set of geography in terms of overlap with the SFG portfolio that banks run otherwise, let's say in Tamil Nadu or some of the southern states where we operate?
No, that is already there, Abhijit. So So even today, if already she has borrowed, if the data is in bureau, automatically we will not lend, right? So the first step they should work. I mean, all of us are insisting RBI and banks that SHG data should be on the bureau. So once it happens, we don't need any other rule. Automatically, one will not lend to them. That will be part of that total exposure requirement automatically. The problem statement there is the non-availability of SHG data on the bureau. I think the drive is to make the data on bureau. So once that happens, automatically that exposure overlap will come down.
Okay, got it. Great, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Manan from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I'm from ICICI Prudential Mutual Fund. Sir, I have one question on the collections front. The data that you have presented, so we understand that collection deferment would not have gone past June. So is it right to assume that the data that you have presented for July includes the entire portfolio and the collections around it, or that there is some deferment that's spilled into July as well?
No, the entire July, there is no deferment at all. It's completely due for the entire portfolio and collection for the entire portfolio.
This is demand, this is collection.
So May and the June, it is fair. May and June, there are some deferment. That is why the collection value is less. Demand and collection both are less. Whereas July, there is no deferment to anybody. I think second week of June, our deferment was over. I think 12th of June, we started entirely collection. So all the book has more than 15 days, more than 3 weeks, close to 3 weeks minimum as of 30th June. So even if they passed, even there's a 15 days delay, it already moved to a stage 2 bucket.
Got it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Sarvesh Gupta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Just wanted to understand a little bit more on this income tax issue. Obviously, this being two-thirds of the net worth is a very, very large issue to deal with. So how exactly is this 2,300 crore demand computed? Because it looks very, very large compared to the size of the operation. So you can just throw some light on the calculation of this 2,300 crore. What is it exactly?
I think we have clarified to the exchanges whatever we can clarify. As we said, there is a gross inaccurate calculation by the tax authorities, and also we said that the tax and legal people have reviewed this and assumed that there is no requirement of contingent liability against this. So to that extent only we can clarify this point of time. Sarvesh.
Like this 2300, can you break it up between the penalties and interest component, and how is
that? No, it's a the prejudice now, therefore we can't do that.
Okay.
Prejudice, right? Said the matter in court, right? The court changed matter, so we will not be able to do that. But yeah, we can give the implication we already said. So what is the implication that the court has stayed it? And the legal and tax consultant and accounting consultants clearly said that there's no need of contingent liability for this. So that much we can clarify.
Okay. And other thing is that when they have they advised you on some settlement amount or anything which you might have to pay to settle this?
No, but there is no demand versus settlement. Demand itself is cancelled, right? When the stay means there is no demand as of now. Stay. When the stay means their demand is not there on our hand right now. So they have to come back with the whether their objection, demand, clarification, modification, whatever it is. So that's why we said there is no need of any contingent liability.
Okay. And since you have put in the data for 10th of the last first week of July, what has been the trend in this month of August, like 10th of August or something, in terms of the collection?
So the trend trend in July is continuing as of now. If you see, we have put the even up to last week of July. Okay, so the same trend, similar trend is continuing.
Okay.
And page 4, you can see the trend week-wise, 10 July, 17 July, 24 July, July month. So similar trend is continuing even now.
So given this, in absence of any third wave, are you suggesting that you might see some reversals in the provisions in quarter 2 and beyond?
As I said earlier, normally low-hanging will get captured in July. And slowly we will get into a harder collection bucket also. So I can't say the same trend will be there for the entire quarter. And we are not, it is the early stage, it is one and a half months. So we need to see carefully for the entire quarter. That's why we will have difficulty to give a complete direction on where it will move. But what we can clearly tell that we have covered significant requirement, and the Q2 should be only business as usual requirement. If at all there's a provision, it's only business as usual. This is what we anticipate as of now. But we would need little more time to comprehend the accurate estimation.
Understood. And on the gross loan portfolio growth, any guidance for this year?
As I said, considering last year we got only 5.5 to 6 months, we still grew 13% YOY, despite we are down at 8% as of September. So considering that we are getting almost 9 months right now, subject to no third wave, we should be doing and we should be beating last year's numbers.
Okay. And this recent change in regulation, or rather, the proposed change in regulation for the removal of the interest cap, the spread cap. So have you already, when are you expecting that to come in, and when is the company going to like act on it and increase the pricing, or rather the spread?
Difficult to say now, because we don't know when the regulator will come back, because I think they collected the feedbacks up to 31st July. That is what the time. So normally regulator will take 1-2 months time, but we don't know really. But I think as I say, institute, we are always ready for changes in regulations. And we believe this is positive for microfinance industry and for us also. And being rural will be more helpful than the urban player coming in this regulation. So we believe we are ready whenever it comes. This will give an opportunity, if at all, whatever the draft will come into rule. We don't know really what will come into rule, what changes will come for the draft. The pricing change will be definitely a good support, so that we will be able to price based on the credit risk rather than depending on the margin cap. So today, we are not, actually microfinance industry, particularly NBFC MFIs, are not in a position to price based on the credit risk rather than pricing based on the margin cap, which is very unique in the world. So we welcome if that change comes as quickly as possible.
Understood. So just one suggestion on the presentation. I think now that we had Madura for almost more than 12 months and all the comparisons are YOY, I think we may consider just having one consolidated picture instead of having two separate pictures, because now it's basically one entity only, and it's been there with us for more than 12 months.
Yeah. Agreed. We are already planning it. Maybe next quarter or so we'll start planning to merge the slides, and so that we'll give one single picture.
Sure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarvesh.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Pala Krishna from Axneon Investments. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. My question is related to competition. Because of high growth in last decade, that is seen in microfinance industry. Do you see more competition because of future growth potential? Are you seeing more competition presently, or do you expect more competition in future?
See, competition will grow, but there's a large opportunity still out in this particular segment. As per our estimation, the unbanked and low-income households in this country are quite large, and only 30 to 40% of them have been assessed by microfinance today. I mean, through all the form of microfinance, whether it's bank or universal bank, SFBs, NBFCs, NGOs, and NBFCs. So almost 60% of them, and majority are in rural. Out of that, 75% are in rural, actually, which is our forte. So despite competition, I think we have large opportunity to encash going forward.
Sir, my second question is related to borrowing cycle. Do we have a classification of borrowers on the basis of borrowing cycle?
Yeah, we do. What I think we have in presentation, as you mentioned, more than 3 years, we have about 12.1 lakh borrowers, which is quite large actually, almost 40% borrowers. 40%, which is quite substantial. And we always believe that customer retention is most important. We have the highest customer retention at about 87%, which is very important for us, which will help us to grow with the lower acquisition cost and the lesser risk in terms of loyal customer base.
Okay. The another question is, with more recognition and standardization of microfinance industry by RBI, do you see political risk getting reduced gradually and more stable and sustainable growth in the next, let's say, 5 years or 10 years?
Hoping so, but having said that, I'm not sure we are into any major political risk. If you observe today, the regulator is support you, the government is support you, central government is support you, all state government support you. They are supporting the microfinance operation in every state. So there was exception on Assam, which we are dealing with separately. But by and large, all states are supportive. We don't see any major political risks we are facing today.
Thank you very much. Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Balakrishna. I'll request you to come back in the question queue for a follow-up question. The next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you. So just one question. Our strategy has always been to grow the on-book balance sheet. While this quarter we've seen, on-book upon the overall AUM coming down to 85%. So going forward, when the situation normalizes, will we see again the on-book growth, driving the overall growth?
Shripal, we are entirely on-book only. I think it is basically the direct assignment what we did to some banks for raising funds. It is not non-book portfolio. It's because of the balance sheet index perspective, we cannot hold those portfolio in our book. That is why there's a difference.
Okay. Got it. And so just on the write-off side, so once we write off the customer, we never lend to those customers incrementally, right?
No, not necessarily. If they pay back the loan, they have to pay back the whole loan, right? If they pay back the whole loan, we're happy to lend them later, no problem at all. There's a rigorous effort in recovering the money. And also, if they pay back the money, we lend them. They join the group back or they form the group. We can lend them again.
Because then like if the same some customer has been written off by some other lender, so that lends his credit score, right? So then in that case, do we take those sort of customers also or acquire those?
That is very less. We only look at our customers in this kind of lending. So normally, bureau-based customer where there is a negative we normally don't lend to them.
Okay. Got it. Just one aspect, like in our annual report, we've highlighted about, you know, becoming a single channel for all lifestyle financial needs of our customer segment. So, don't you think that also leads to increase in the risk, like because while we are eating up the entire pocket of the customer, that also increases the risk because we are the lender to that customer segment. So, any thought process here?
Of course, we need to review every potential risk in our expanded thought process. So far also, I think we are one of the high risk governance model. Obviously, we will expand that to our new model also. So this thought process is moving from a borrower to moving to a addressing the borrower family actually. So eventually, our thought process is to address the need of the family, not only the loan. Today we are addressing all loan requirement to them. Maybe beyond loans, obviously we will review every set of risks, piloting each one of that, identify the risks, identify the controls, and then go with what is controllable. Now we may not do everything for the need, but what is controllable, what is not controllable, we definitely will not venture into. But the risk governance, business potential, revenue potential, all those things will be taken care before expanding such businesses.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Anand Bhagnani from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Anand, sorry to interrupt your voice.
Sorry, Anand, you are breaking.
No.
Sir, again, your voice is still breaking. I request you to come in a better reception area, please.
Give me a second.
Sure.
I hope this is better now.
That's still breaking.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. So, first question is on tax.
We can't hear your question, Anand.
Fine, I'll come back with you.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I think if you are breaking again, maybe try to get into a proper network area.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Ray Kumar for closing comments.
Thank you all. Thank you for your patient hearing. And we as an institution will continue to put our best efforts to ensure that we protect the company's interest, protect the investors' interest, and we will, I think the management team is with me to rededicate ourselves to ensure the coming back to normalcy, and we are confident about it. So thank you very much. Have a good night and stay safe. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.